And now, a presentation on the Mental Health News Radio Network. The Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show.
Ryan, that is a freaking awesome question.
You are the power, and you do not need anybody's permission.
He's the only guy that ever crawled out of a grave where people didn't go, oh, ah!
Don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride.
You're a great interviewer. You're one of the best.
If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed.
It is a great honor once again to welcome back to our show, Doug Casey. He's an international freedom advocate. He is a person who sees trends well, many years in the future. And you can learn more about him by going to his website at internationalman.com. You can also check out his podcast on YouTube called Doug Casey's Take. Mr. Casey, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back, although physically, I'm in Buenos Aires now.
That's all right. Okay. So, geez, every time we talk, it's like the world changes. It becomes more surreal. I don't understand why people are watching TV or watching movies to escape. I mean, this is beyond anything you would see in a movie. Based on what you're observing right now, what have been two ways that have been most surreal to you in terms of how the world has changed in the past few years?
Well, it kind of seems to me that the world is coming unglued in a lot of ways. The stock market is still very much near its all-time high. So people figure that what they own there and their pension funds and so forth, their mutual funds, they'll be okay, but they won't be okay because the stock market is at one of the great bubble levels in history. So that's from a financial point of view. The bond market is continuing on its way down. That's just stocks and bonds. But what really concerns me in the U.S. anyway, and there's all kinds of things going on elsewhere in the world, but we can talk about the U.S. It's that these red people and blue people really hate each other. And we have an election coming up, I suppose, in November. And it doesn't matter who wins. The other side is going to be bitterly unhappy and feel that they were cheated out of it. Certainly the MAGA people will feel that way if the Democrats win. And I expect the Democrats are going to win, not because they're going to get more votes than the MAGA people, but they're going to retain their control of the apparatus of the state in Washington. It doesn't augur well, quite frankly. We're going to have a political crisis for that reason. We're going to have a financial crisis, very likely, as I mentioned, with the overpriced stock market. We could have an economic crisis. We could have a military crisis with what's going on abroad. So I hate to use this overused phrase, this analogy of a perfect storm, but this could be one of those years. So I guess that's a somewhat long response to your question.
Well, it was a response that we wanted to hear. When it comes to the political crisis, it just seems that, well, the U.S. is, I guess, that they got 7.2 million new people that just kind of waltz right in there. I'm sure that they're probably signing them up to vote, and I'm sure that's going to have an impact on the election. But even if they weren't there, I mean, it just seems like you can manipulate things, and I don't even understand why people think it's a way of changing things. Do you think that we would see more of a political chaos if people don't get their candidate to win, as opposed to if more people just no longer believe that the system is valid? What is the recipe for greater chaos? The reputation and validation of the system as a whole for people to express themselves, or if people just become more embedded and more committed to a particular candidate?
Well, as I'm sure you know, I don't believe in democracy. That's become like a buzzword for people that it's ill-defined and it doesn't mean what it used to mean. Look, democracy, even if it exists, is really just mob rule with a coat and tie. The way it's used today is that 51% of the people can basically control the other 49% of the people. It's an improper way for people to relate to each other, quite frankly. I'm an ANCAP. I don't believe in the use of coercion, certainly not institutionalized coercion, which is what the state, the government, is all about. Getting back to the elections, how can this election, now that the Democrats have, and these people, the Democrat Party, it's not even the party of FDR, that Democrat Party, which was not a good thing, incidentally. I'm extremely anti FDR and the New Deal, and I can tell you why. I thought it was an awful thing.
I agree with you.
But the Democratic Party now can only be compared to the Jacobins in France after the revolution. This was the group of people that wound up executing 30,000 Frenchmen with the guillotine, that wanted to overturn the whole basis of society, changing the names of the months of the year and many other things. And that's where these people are at. They're professional wokesters. To them, the whole woke philosophy is a new religion that they want to impose upon the other people in the country. I think they're going to win because it's not just the 7 or 8 or 10, nobody knows how many millions of migrants have poured across the border in the last 4 years. Many or most, nobody knows, of them have been given credit cards, have been given plane rides to other parts of the country. It's almost like these migrants are have been invited into the country to change things. And they'll all be induced to vote Democrat. That's a major influence. Mail-in votes are a major factor in a number of states, many states actually. I think it's 32 out of the 50 allow mail-in votes. And the bad guys, and I do see them as bad guys, will use that to maximum advantage. The electronic voting machines are very liable to be hacked, as I suspect they were in the last election. So all those things augur for the Democrats winning. In addition to the fact that the philosophical tenor of the average American has turned very collectivist, very statist. And yeah, it doesn't, it's not good. We could be entering a time in this country which is similar to that of the Jacobins in France, or for that matter, the great Cultural Revolution in China. During the 60s, or for that matter, what happened in Germany in the 30s, because Adolf Hitler was elected by a plurality of the German people, about 35% voted for him. So this is one of those times when anything could happen, because we're looking at, as I said, chaos from a political and a financial and an economic and maybe a military point of view. So hold on to your hat. That's why I feel pretty good about being here in Argentina at the moment.
I want to, I guess there are two questions on this one. One of them is, looking at that political crisis, if we look at other countries that have descended into a full-blown tyranny, which I think the U.S. is just getting there. It's just rapidly escalating, going there with what's happening. And the only difference between, I think, the U.S. and other countries is, I don't know if there's ever been a citizenry in the history of the world that's had this many arms. So the citizens are well armed. So if needed be, they could, theoretically speaking, push back. I don't know if they will. I don't know if they have the heart to do that. But do you think that if we're looking at other collectivist society or other societies that have gone on the same path the U.S. has gone on, where have they gone to? What stage did they? What's the next stage for this? And how do they eventually collapse? Or how do people eventually rediscover freedom, if that's possible?
Well, I think on the way to wherever we're going, I think we're going to have something resembling a civil war. And most people think of civil war as, well, what happened from 1861 to 1865. But technically speaking, that was not a civil war. It was a war of secession. A civil war is one where two or more separate groups are looking to control the same government, control the same area of land. That was not the case from 1861 to 65. It was a secession movement, so it shouldn't be called a civil war. Actually, we did have a civil war in this country, but that was what we called the Revolutionary War. From 1775 to 1783. Because most people think of the so-called Revolutionary War, and it was also a war of secession of the states from Britain. But just as important is that it was a civil war, because about a third of the people, that's a guesstimate, but that's what they think, wanted to part company with Britain. About a third of the people wanted to stay hooked up with Britain, and about a third of the people were on the fence or didn't care. The problem was this, is that the Revolutionary War wasn't about things like Concord and Saratoga and Yorktown. Those are military battles. The real problem with that war was in small towns all over North America, where one group or the other hated the other group just as much as the red people and the blue people do today in the US. And it was nasty. It was ugly. It was dangerous. I think that we're headed into something that's going to resemble what happened during our actual Civil War, which was the Revolutionary War, where people have drawn these battle lines. And you mentioned the fact that Americans are well armed. Yeah, that's true. But you cannot, in today's world, effectively use arms against the government. If because I'll send a squad of police or a squad of soldiers by, and you don't have a prayer. So fighting the government in an armed way makes no sense. The problem will be when your neighbor believes things and wants to do things that will damage you, and both sides believe that. There might be that kind of violence between arms, but you really once it's really hard to fight an entrenched state, and that's what we have today. All the police and the army and the National Guardsmen, they all will just do what they're told when they're given an order to round up the usual suspects. Why? Maybe they don't believe in the order, but they have credit card bills, they have car payments, they have student loans, they have mortgages. And if they don't toe the line, they'll be fired and economically damaged. So of course they'll do what they're told. So I'm not optimistic, actually, from any point of view, about how this is going to pan out.
Martin Armstrong, Trent Forecaster, I mean, says according to his predictions and what his computer's been making, which generates 100 report today, says that around May 7th, we're going to see this major inflection point with the US where things were going to get progressively more intense. And he's talking about right now about former President Trump and on his trial. And he said that they're going to put him in jail no matter what. And he said that it doesn't matter what your political beliefs are. This is just the destruction of the rule of law. It's breaking things down. It's causing people to lose faith. And when they do, then things get more intense. So I'm just wondering, from your perspective, is there any particular event or time or indications we should look at when this thing will actually occur, when we'll actually start to see a full-blown civil war occurring? And if so, what states do you think would most likely align? And what do you think that end game would be? Would the federal government be able to squash it like Lincoln did?
I really don't know much about Armstrong. I know he's got a computer program, but everybody's got a computer program. I don't know if he's got a laptop computer or a magic eight ball, but I don't buy that. You put something into a computer and it comes out with a magic answer. But there's going to be trouble this summer and fall. I don't see any way around it. And what will the epicenter of the trouble be here in the US? Or there in the US? I'm not in the US. Well, the big cities. I'd stay out of, I would not want to be in New York or San Francisco or Portland or LA or those places because that's where people get together in a critical mass and they're dominated by the lowest common denominator. And they go out in the streets and they do stupid things. So when times get tough, don't be in the big cities. There's no guarantee, frankly, that the utilities will turn on when you flip the light switch or that food's going to be delivered to your local Safeway. So you're much better if you're going to be in the US, being in a small town or a rural environment. That's the best way to kind of insulate yourself a little bit from it. That's how I'd play it.
And just in again, in terms of potential civil war breaking out, what states do you think will more likely be pitted against each other? And are there any, I mean, I know you're outside of the US, but if you were in the US, what states would you consider moving to? Do you think you might be able to insulate yourself away from some of the the war, the tyranny? Just what states do you think are most free?
Well, I wouldn't want to be in the so-called blue states because in the blue states, the government there are captured by wokesters, and most of your neighbors are going to have the wrong kind of philosophical beliefs. They're going to be collectivists and statists. So you'll have both your government and the majority of your neighbors against you. That is to say, if you're a freedom-loving person. So don't be in New York or Massachusetts, God forbid, Washington, D.C., California, Oregon, all those, some of these states like California, I still wouldn't want to be there. The farm areas of California are very different from the urban areas, same with Oregon and Washington. So where do you want to be? Well, the problem is that most people can't pick up and leave wherever they are. They've got a job where they are. They got family where they are. What's going to happen to their house? If you leave your house unoccupied, it might be squatted in.
Yeah,
This is a new problem in the US, but a real problem because you've got these millions and millions of vagrants, migrants from societies that don't accept Western values, and they think it's perfectly all right to squat in property. So I don't know if you're in the wrong place now, shame on you. But it's going to be hard to move, I think. Where are you physically located, Ryan?
North Carolina.
Oh,
North
all right.
Carolina. And I say that there's one major city. Well, it's called a major city. It's small Raleigh. And then there's Charlotte, which is pretty big. I'm very far away from there. But the town that I live in, it's very peaceful. Bond. I mean, I'm always, I mean, I would, as far as I kind of want to broaden horizons and look beyond this, because I know I do not want to be in a high densely populated area, especially with people that want to fringe upon others. You know, they talk about the red blue, and I'll just say that in my experience, I just feel like a less infringement upon one of those particular groups, and I don't want to be infringed upon at all. I feel that same perspective. I don't want to infringe upon anyone. But if you're looking outside the US, what are some of the countries that you think would be wonderful that have a bright future ahead, and why should people consider moving to these countries?
Well, right now, as I mentioned earlier, I'm in Argentina, and that's kind of a long story for me. I've always been a fan of Argentina. One reason is because I played polo for 20 years, and Argentina is kind of the epicenter of polo. So that's one thing. But something magical, something very unusual, something extraordinary has happened here in Argentina 3 months or something like that ago. When they had their national election and a chap named Javier Milei was elected president, this is the biggest election phenomenon in all of history because Milei is a self-declared anarcho-capitalist. He doesn't believe in government as an entity, and he's stated numerous times that his intention is to gut the Argentine government, not just cut it back, but to absolutely wipe out most of the Argentine government so that hopefully by the time he's through, it'll have nothing but a police force and a court system. And then he can start privatizing those things too. Argentina is a country that was one of the most prosperous in the world 100 years ago. It was one of the four or five most prosperous countries in the world. And then the virus of socialism took over, and everybody started voting for a living instead of working for a living. Juan Perón and Evita, who they made an opera about, destroyed the country. Half the country is poverty-stricken at this moment. So Milei was elected with almost 60% of the votes. That's extraordinary for somebody that is way outside the spectrum. But it was mainly the young people who realized that they were the ones that were getting ripped off worst. And he's doing it. He's fired not just thousands, he's fired scores of thousands of government employees, and there are more being fired. Laws are being changed. Rent control has been abolished. Price controls, subsidies. For the first time in decades, the Argentine government is running a surplus. Like I said, I don't care about any government, but they're less dangerous when they're running a surplus because that means they don't have to print money. Inflation down here was running 200% per year. In the past, it's run much more. But now it's dropping towards zero. And that's great because it means that if you work and produce more than you consume and save the difference, in the past, if you save pesos, they dried up and blew away. But now you can actually build capital and get ahead of the game. This is an unbelievable thing. So that's kind of a long way. A very long
Appreciate it.
answer to your reasonable question. If you want to transplant some other country now, Argentina would be number one because things are very cheap down here. Property prices are a fraction of what they are in the US. And assuming something bad doesn't happen to Malay, this place is going to skyrocket upwards in prosperity. and personal freedom. So Argentina's number one. And as you know, I've been to 155 countries. I've lived in 10. And Argentina finally seems like the right choice. I've always liked it, but now I really like it.
You know, Jeff Barwick's a huge fan of Mexico. Is that a country that you're comfortable with? Because they always tell you in the U.S. how violent Mexico is and how crazy things are. I was wondering that, or Costa Rica, or any of those countries. Are they other countries that you think are okay, say best for Americans? Because, I don't know, in some way, I think it goes beyond how far your money goes. But I think it's wonderful to be around people that don't want to infringe upon you, that have some kind of basic moral code. Because I grew up in the U.S. in the 80s, and I think things were pretty cool back then. It was different. I mean, people were generally happier. There was a good sense of community, and it's all gone right now. And people just hate each other. And I feel like it's been like this rise of this parasite. The parasites have just kind of metastasized, and it's something's really gone definitely awry in the U.S. There's no real unity. I mean, I think there's unity in the pockets. But are there any countries where, you know, you go there, you can once again kind of experience what life used to be like in the U.S., where people had a general respect for each other, you know, regardless if your dollar goes farther or not?
Well, I lived in New Zealand for years, and I really like New Zealand. It's really beautiful. Population's low. They're basically English. Although there's been a lot of immigration to New Zealand that's kind of changing the character of the place. Probably not for the better. Chinese immigration to New Zealand, generally a good thing, the way I see it, because the Chinese are, you know, they're hardworking, they're orderly, they have great food. But there's also been a lot of Muslim immigration to New Zealand. And anywhere that the Mohammedans immigrate is trouble. It's just trouble. Mohammedanism, and I prefer to call it Mohammedanism, not Islam, which is their word. It means submission. It used to be in the West, we'd call it Mohammedanism, but they've replaced it with Islam, which means submission, which is a sign of submission, where we use their word for it. So that's a problem, but it's not an overweening problem. New Zealand is still, I think, a top choice. But they do stupid things down there, like voters do everywhere. They elected this stupid woman. Her name was Jacinda Ardern. She was an actual communist. Well, she's gone now.
I saw how they locked New Zealand down. I was really, I saw how the tyranny they had there, and yeah. Australia for sure. That's why, I think, yeah.
It was awful. Anyway, the Kiwis have reacted against that. They've got kind of a decent guy running the country now, kind of. So I'd look at New Zealand. I think that's a choice. Australia, I don't know what to say about Australia. Where else would I go in the world? Thailand. I'm a big fan of Thailand. Of course, you're never going to be part of Thai society. You will be part of Australian or Kiwi society, but you'll never be part of, you'll always be a foreigner in Thailand. But they're friendly people, and it's a great place to live. I love Thailand. Where else would I go? You know,
would you ever go to Mexico?
Jeff
talks about that so much. He's like, yeah, one of the best things about this is that apparently the people are very united, and they don't really care about who the officials are. But that's his perspective. I was curious what your thoughts were about that.
I'm a fan of Mexico, yes. And the crime problem, you know, go to Mexico and get murdered. I don't think so. The drug cartels are mainly interested in making money. They're not interested in knocking off gringo tourists or residents. So, yeah, I think Mexico is just fine, frankly. Where else would I go? I wouldn't go to Guatemala. I wouldn't go to southern Mexico, perhaps because those two countries are pretty much Indian country, and the Indian tribes have, like, race has become a big thing all over the world now. Many people look at themselves as part of a racial group as opposed to individual being an individual human being. So southern Mexico and Guatemala, not so good if you're a white guy. Costa Rica, expensive, overly popular with North American residents and tourists. Panama, that's an interesting place. You can put that on your travel list. Where else would I go in South America? I'm a big fan of southern Brazil, very much. Argentina, Uruguay. I spent a lot of time in Uruguay. Small country, 3.5 million people. Farm country with a beautiful beach. So it's like Kansas meets the jet set. That's Uruguay, but it's expensive. Where else would I go? I would have said Chile in the past. But the trouble with all these countries, some political character comes on the scene and he promises them something for nothing. Don't worry, the government's got lots of money, we'll give you all this stuff. And it winds up damaging everybody's freedom and destroying the economy. If you're a young male, I've said for many years, Africa is the place to go if you want to make your way in the world. I'm
Africa.
a big fan of Africa. I mean, the continent's going downhill. That's a problem. But at the same time, I like to go someplace that's not a level playing field. I like to go someplace where I can bring something to the party where I have an advantage, a marginal advantage. And you go to Africa, you're going to have experiences, you're going to have education, you're going to have capital, you're going to have connections that the locals don't have. So you can immediately advance to the higher levels of society and bring something to the party so that you make money, they make money, everybody's happy. So I'm a big fan of Africa, but not for families, for
But are these other countries you mentioned, do they have like less government intrusion? Because it seems that the U.S. it's becoming more and more, way more fascist. I mean, it seems like they're on the cusp of allowing this new FISA bill to pass in the Senate. Edward Snowden's been sounding alarm, says it's going to basically allow them to search your phones and search everything without a warrant. They weren't already doing that, but the fact that it's going to be out there, it just seems like it's another step in the wrong direction. I always The U.S. is rapidly ascending. It's totalitarianism.
Yeah,
And
it is.
as much as I want to believe Larkin Rose, because he does his talks, he says, well, the US, the world itself is moving away towards authoritarianism, moving away from this belief in authority. I mean, I want to believe that. I know a lot of people have been upset about it. But at the same time, I can't deny the fact that these Jacobins, if you want to call them, are taking more and more power. They seem like there's no leash on them anymore.
No, there's not. And the U.S. really is turning into a police state. Every law that's passed cements that further in fact. And as things get bad in the U.S., the best thing that can probably happen realistically is that some man on a white horse comes along and says, elect me, I'll kiss everything and make it better. And turn it into hopefully a kinder and gentler form of a dictatorship. So it's too bad because the US really was unique and better than any other country in the world. It really was, no question about it. But well, that's why we can't have nice things around here. They ruined it.
So, Doug, the World Health Organization is, aside from the fact that they just, ruined millions, if not billions, of lives in the last couple of years, they want to do this new thing where they want everyone to sign on to the World Health Organization Pandemic Treaty, which is going to shift sovereignty from all these nations that sign onto it, so they can declare an emergency, and they'll probably use it for they can declare lockdown. So they say lockdowns, all these countries have to lock down, and they're probably going to do climate lockdowns, and they're going to vote on it in May. From your perspective, do you think that's going to succeed in the U.S.? Do you think that's going to succeed in the world? And if it does, say for example, succeed in the U.S., do you think that that will cause certain states to rebel completely against it? And if so, will they be successful?
God, it's really scary. This whole COVID scam, and it was a scam. We could talk for a whole show about how it was really a criminal scam. And it seems like, even though lots of evidence is starting to come out that it was a criminal scam, these people are still advancing their agenda. How do you stop them? That's a good question. Because once any group, and it's always the group that wants to control other people, it's not freedom lovers. Freedom lovers like to mind their own business and watch their own lives and families. It's always the busybodies that get involved in these organizations and keep pushing and pushing. So, what can we do about it? Well, all you can really do is talk to your friends and neighbors and associates. In no uncertain terms, don't keep your mouth shut. Tell them what's going on, and maybe a few of them will get in the groove on that. But the problem is that the spirit of the century is running against freedom-loving people. So we're being washed away by a big wave of negativity at this point. And it's hard to fight against that, just like it's hard to fight against a tidal wave. If you were in France during the revolution of the 1790s, what could you do about it? Not much, except get the hell out of France, okay? If you were in Germany in the 1930s, what could you do about it? Well, nothing, except get the hell out of Germany, Russia in the 1920s, same thing. And I'm afraid it's turning into that in the US. Which is really a problem because the US has always been the place where people from around the world that were freedom lovers could go. But if you can't go to the US, now where are you going to go? Well, Argentina is your best shot at the moment, but it's a real problem, Ryan. And it's not just the World Health or Hell Organization. It's even bigger than that is this mass hysteria about climate change.
Crazy.
It's crazy. I mean, I speak as somebody that is kind of an amateur geologist, and because I've always been involved in the mining industry and pay attention to these things. And the fact is, the climate has been changing forever, like roughly the last 4 billion years, and it'll keep changing. But carbon dioxide has approximately zero to do with climate change today. But they're altering everything that you can do and have and say because of this chimera, which it's totally phony. And the kids have been indoctrinated to believe it. It's hard to turn this juggernaut around, frankly. I
Yeah.
mean, you and I try to do our part, do our share, but essentially we're beating our heads against a wall.
Trying, Doug. I send things out to my family, to my friends. I send them notices, and no responses. Like they don't care. Like, and I
No.
send and I try and try and but it's like it's I have to try. I mean, Ron Paul always has this thing. He says people can't unhear what you tell them, and I just don't understand why there isn't why more people aren't interested in this. I mean, I love freedom. I love freedom. I think it's amazing, but there's also the personal responsibility. Maybe people don't want to take on any kind of personal responsibility. They want to be taken care of. There was a reaction to okay. So when I there was a whole when Iran launched their drones into Israel, there were a bunch of Gen Zers that were posting videos about why they didn't want to be drafted, and some of them gave distinct reasons, but if you watch them and you listen to the tone for what they're talking about, It was just very strange. They're unique in that one way, but you also, I mean, they were talking about how they didn't want to go, but I didn't hear anyone talking about why, it's an egregious, act against civil liberties. I wish more people were speaking out like you, like Jeff, like Ron Paul. And I wish this should be something that we should all agree on because, freedom is something that everyone wins about it. But I don't understand why there's such this need to be part of collectivism at this point. I thought that I figured this would be something we would evolve well past in the last couple hundred years. I don't understand why it's come back so strong.
Yeah, it's a real problem. Maybe it's innate in human nature. I mean, we're pack animals, basically, and hierarchical, and the leader says something, and most people just tend to do it because it's easier to get along in order to go along. And one of the big problems that we have in our society is the education system. The education system has been totally and absolutely captured by wokesters and Marxists and all kinds of horrible people, socialists. And they indoctrinate kids that go to college at great expense. So the kids that spend all this money and have a debt albatross around their neck for decades, they're invested in believing what they spent all this money to learn. Hey, I paid a lot of money for it. It's got to be worth something, all this bullshit that's been crammed down their throats. And it's the same in high schools. It's the same in grade schools. So they're indoctrinated from an early age. And both Lenin and Saint Ignatius Loyola both observed that if you give me a kid for the first 6 years of his life or something like that, I will bend the course he takes for the rest of his life. And that's what's happening. It's hard to turn that around. It's a slow process. And right now we're on the wrong side of history. So I don't have a solution. Listen, I do what I do, not because I need the money, because I don't. I've got actually plenty of money. I do it because it's good, good karma to tell people, give people an alternative, and promote personal freedom as opposed to subjugation. That's why I do it.
I appreciate all that you do. And so Doug Casey, thank you so much for being with us today, for sharing your wisdom, your insights. I know a lot of your perspectives were sobering to hear, but we have to hear them. We have to understand what truths are. And as some people live in this pie in the sky thing, thinking that everything's okay. Well, it's like, it's not. You have to face the truth in order to realize you have a problem in order to deal with it. But learn more about Doug by going to his website at internationalman.com. And also in the when we post the show, we're going to post links to all of Doug's novels, which are pretty awesome, by the way. So there, I'll give you a couple of them. They're Speculator, High Ground Novels, Book One. There's I think Assassin, Book Three. And what was the second one, Doug?
Drug lord, where our hero Charles Knight becomes a drug lord, and we show that you can be a good guy as a drug lord, just like you can be a good guy as an assassin. So they're really good novels. I really urge people go on Amazon and get one. You're in for a treat.
Excellent. Doc, thank you so much for all that you do and for being with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Ryan.
Okay, everyone, that concludes today's edition of the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. Special thanks to our unbelievable guest, and special thanks as always to our virtues, Miss Carrie O'Connor, Miss Constance Dallas, and our associate producer, Jenny Lamisa. To learn more about the Out of Limits of Inner Truth, please go to our website at outoflimitsradio.com. And till the next time we meet, my friends, I wish upon you an abundance of peace, love, and beers.
Yay!
Take good care, and thank you so much for listening.